This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. The infamous Roe v. Wade decision of 1973 legalized abortion on demand in the United States. Since that time, more than 56 million babies have been aborted. This is a tragedy of historic proportions to those who know that life begins at conception. The pro-life movement has been working since the Supreme Court decision to educate the public as to the sanctity of life. Work continues with the annual March for Life, scholarly studies, legislative efforts, and journalism. There is reason for hope that the tide is finally turning. Sarah Torrey is an analyst with the Heritage Foundation, a Washington-based conservative think tank, and she focuses on policy issues related to religious liberty, marriage, and family. She is today's guest on World Lutheran News Digest.
And now today's Fast Track.
Here's news in brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. Kay Kricklow and Brian Fricke began service this month on the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Foundation Board of Trustees. Both were elected to their new positions in November during the Foundation's annual membership meeting, where the Reverend Dr. William Meyer was also re-elected for his second three-year term as trustee. Kricklow lives in Drayton, North Dakota, and currently works as vice president at Coda Bank. She's a member of Trinity Lutheran Church in Drayton. Kricklow is the past national president of the Lutheran Women's Missionary League and has served on the board of directors for the LCMS North Dakota District. She's a graduate of Acres Business College and the North Dakota School of Banking. Fricke, a certified financial planner, lives in Winter Springs, Florida, and owns Financial Management Concepts, a wealth management firm that focuses on retirement planning and investment management. He's a member of Ascension Lutheran Church in Castleberry, Florida, and serves on various community boards, including the Winter Springs Pension Fund. Meyer, from Wildwood, Missouri, is retired but serves as a part-time director of development and financial affairs for the Concordia University System. He also held positions at Concordia Publishing House and with the LCMS Foundation. Meyer holds a BA from Concordia Senior College, Fort Wayne, Indiana, a Master of Divinity from Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, MA from the University of Wisconsin, and PhD from the University of Wisconsin as well. This month, Liberty Institute sent a demand letter to NASA's Johnson Space Center, threatening a federal lawsuit over NASA's censorship of the word Jesus from employees' email announcement. In 2001, employees at NASA's Johnson Space Center formed the JSC Praise and Worship Club. They meet during the lunch hour to discuss matters of the Christian faith and sing Christian songs. In one announcement, the JSC Praise and Worship Club announced that month's theme for the meeting is, quote, Jesus is our life, unquote. Days after the announcement ran in the JSC Daily Newsletter, JSC Today, NASA's lawyers called the club president to explain that the club's announcement was unacceptable because it included the name Jesus. NASA lawyers claim that if the name Jesus appeared in the e-blast, it could make people think that NASA was endorsing Christianity, even if it was very clear that the club, not NASA, made the announcement. Liberty Institute says that NASA is engaging in illegal government censorship by rejecting employee speech because it has a religious viewpoint. The attorneys argue that NASA is violating the employees' religious liberty and free speech rights in violation of the First Amendment and federal law. This year, the U.S. Supreme Court is expected to take on two life-related cases. One case is Whole Woman's Health versus Hillerstadt, which involves a Texas law requiring abortion doctors to be admitted and credentialed to practice local hospitals, and that abortion facilities meet the same requirements as most medical facilities in terms of quality and care. The LCMS recently participated in an amicus brief pertaining to the Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstadt's brief. World Lutheran News Digest will be back right after these messages.
Book Talk is for all who like books about the Christian faith, and there are so many of them, old books, new books, classic books. Jiminy Durante says it well.
I'll never forget the day I read a book. It was contagious, 70 pages. There were pictures here and there, so it wasn't hard to
That's bear. What we do on Book Talk. Remember the day we read the book and chat about it with its author. Join us, live streaming archive.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
Facebook is one of the biggest social media instruments for checking out what is going on with worldwide KFUO. On our Facebook page, facebook.com/KFUO radio, you'll see us posting pictures, online videos, show information, as well as reviews and previews of events at KFUO. Worldwide KFUO, we are where you are, on Facebook at facebook.com/KFUO radio. The worldwide leader of confessional Lutheranism, Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to join us for Issues Etc. weekday afternoons from 3 to 5. Issues Etc. is a live call-in show with a twofold purpose. First, we defend and teach the truths rediscovered during the Reformation, grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. Second, we challenge today's postmodern culture with its unbiblical ideology.
Issues Etc. live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO Radio.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. The work by the Wilongasi Lutheran Firehound.
I'm Kip Allen, host of World Lutheran News Digest. My guest today is Sarah Torrey with the Heritage Foundation, and she's going to be discussing the March for Life 2016 and the pro-life movement's advances over the last year or so. Sarah, to start this off, could you tell me a little bit about yourself and tell me about the Heritage Foundation?
Sure, and thanks for having me on. I'm a policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. I work primarily on life, religious liberty, family policy, and various things that relate to that. I write a lot for our news site, The Daily Signal. The Heritage Foundation is over 40 years old. We're one of the oldest think tanks here in Capitol Hill. We produce policy papers that provide recommendations to mainly federal legislatures, Congress, helping them to think through how to limit government and advance our first principles.
Now, the March for Life 2016 has just ended earlier this year. And, of course, we had the weather did not cooperate. In fact, sometimes they're calling it now Snow v. Wade. Despite that, we had tens of thousands of people turned out. You were there at the march, I believe. What is your take on that?
Absolutely. It started snowing just as we began walking from the National Mall up to the Supreme Court, taking a very well-known route now, over 40 years, marching on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade on January 22nd. It was every year, and I feel like it just gets better every year. There's so much energy. There's so many young people, and it really is a testament to how many minds and hearts the pro-life movement has changed over the past 40 years. When my mom and my grandmother started going, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, they were a couple of only a handful of people who are in the crowds. And now there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands in other years when the weather cooperates. So it's really exciting to see how energized the pro-life movement is.
That was something that really struck me. This is the oldest continual protest march going on in the nation today, and it has been growing each year. Of course, the total numbers may have been down a little bit because of the weather, but I know we've had upwards of 500,000 people marching in the past. Certainly, we had many, many thousands this time. And regrettably, sometimes it seems that the mainstream media either misses it or ignores it. Have you noticed this as well?
Absolutely. It doesn't matter how many hundreds of thousands, as you mentioned, are out on the National Mall peaceably protesting two decisions that invented a right to abortion on demand across the country have taken, since that day, have taken more than 56 million lives in legal abortion, and many countless women have suffered the very devastating impacts of abortion on demand, not just physically, but emotionally, psychologically. And it's really a shame that the mainstream media completely ignores this incredible size of the American population who believes in the pro-life cause, who wants to reach out and save not only unborn children, but to also care and love for their mothers and help them through what might be a difficult time. Despite all of those challenges, in especially the media, the pro-life movement really has changed the hearts and minds of an entire generation. We talk often about how many high schoolers, college-age kids are at the March for Life, and that it bears out even in polling. My mother's generation, my parents' generation, was not anywhere near as pro-life as mine is. So they really have made a lot of headway.
That's one of the points I wanted to bring up. When the March for Life first started back in 74, excuse me, it was basically a handful of older people. And as you pointed out, more and more young people are involved in this. And in fact, here are with our Lutheran schools in the St. Louis area and throughout the country, actually, we have the Concordia University system. Many of our students organized trips to D.C. to participate in this. And from the pictures I've seen of the march, this is overwhelmingly a younger crowd. This, to me, shows almost there's a sea change of attitude out there. Is this what you're seeing?
Absolutely. And I actually think the Lutherans were, one Lutheran group was right in the front holding the main banner.
They
marching.
Were.
Yeah,
they were.
So it was a great presence there. Yeah, and the Knights of Columbus actually did a poll that was released the week of the march that shows some of this movement that the pro-life movement has created. And that showed that most Americans, 81%, that's a lot of Americans, that's a large portion of the American public, agree that there should be significant restrictions and safeguards at least within the first 3 months of pregnancy. And many of those in those 80% would only allow abortion in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother, or maybe even never permit it at all. So that's a large portion of the American public that would greatly restrict abortion from where it is today. Unfortunately, after Roe v. Wade and the failure of many national leaders to protect unborn children and women, we have some of the most extreme laws in the world. We're one of only seven countries in the world, in the company of such great human rights defenders like North Korea and China, who allow elective late-term abortion after 20 weeks. The American public's view of this issue is completely out of step with where our policies are, and unfortunately, policymakers have a lot of work to do to get those back in line.
It seems to me a lot of the pro-abortion groups simply regard abortion as a matter of birth control.
It's really unfortunate that, and I think that's really out of step with many of Americans. They recognize that this is a very difficult issue regardless of the circumstances. And I think more and more, especially with the advent of ultrasound, the increasing discussions that we've had, whether it's through the Partial Birth Abortion Act, where you're seeing one of the more gruesome procedures that can happen, or we're having a discussion in Congress even this past year on late-term abortions, abortions that are happening after 20 weeks, all of these discussions are really showing the American public the reality that this is a child who is a human being, who is a person, who deserves the protection of the right to life. And the mother is equally important, and we should surround her with support and love and help her through this situation, whether it be providing options for adoption or more support for her to parent. That's what the pro-life movement has really, I think, succeeded at, is doing this, you know, love them both, love both the child and the mother.
One area where I think we had kind of a rather strong demonstration of how this is now going mainstream was that famous Doritos commercial during the Super Bowl, and how it used an ultrasound thing showing the fetus and what have you. And the National Abortion Rights Action League just went ballistic over that spot. They called it humanizing the human fetus. Excuse me? It is human.
Yeah. How dare you humanize a human? And I think that, you know, it sort of shows how the pro-abortion movement is really on its heels, especially with the advent, again, of ultrasound. We have this view into the womb to see tiny fingers, tiny mouths, see them yawn, see them, you know, apparently like Dorito chips. This gives a beautiful, beautiful picture to so many millions of Americans. You can't scroll through Facebook without seeing your friends post ultrasound pictures of their children.
And I've seen many, many articles of women who have changed their mind about getting an abortion once they have seen these ultrasound pictures of their baby.
Absolutely. And it's really important, especially at the state level. Many states have taken good steps to ensure that women are shown those pictures before they make their final decision about whether or not to have an abortion. And those have really helped in many situations. Say the Storks, another organization that shows ultrasound pictures, provides ultrasounds even right outside abortion clinics and pregnancy centers, has really changed the hearts and minds of many women and men.
One of the things I wanted to bring up was Planned Parenthood itself. That organization claims that something like only 3% of their function happens to concerns abortion. Yet according to their own figures, more than 40% of their funding comes from governmental sources. And they claim, of course, that taxpayer funding is never directly used for abortion. However, that 40% of the funding frees up the other 60% of their funding for whatever they use. So whether it's direct or indirect, there is definitely public taxpayer dollars being used to support abortion. Is this correct?
We're definitely supporting one of the largest organizations in the abortion industry. Planned Parenthood does about almost one out of three abortions in the United States.
And that's about $300,000 a year just performed by Planned Parenthood, if I'm correct.
Exactly. Over $300,000 over the past few years alone. And actually, they've been increasing that number of annual abortion procedures over the past 10 years. All the while, they've decreased the number of other services that they say they provide, like cancer screening, preventative services, have decreased by more than 50% since 2004. So even if you're just a policymaker and you're looking at this organization thinking, should we really be putting limited taxpayer funding to this organization who claims to be helping women, they're just not even doing what they say they will do for women very well. They're not providing as many cancer screenings. They don't provide mammograms at all. They don't provide other preventative types. They're decreasing their preventative services. And so we haven't even talked about the fact that they're the largest provider of abortion in America, and that they're accused of doing incredibly disturbing things with the body parts of children who are aborted in their facilities. So policymakers have, to my mind, a very clear decision to make. Let's not put $500 million of taxpayer funding, hard-earned taxpayer dollars, to an organization that commits 300,000 abortions every year and is not providing services as they should to women.
$500 million taxpayer dollars going to Planned Parenthood every year. Well, you look at, there are thousands of pregnancy centers across the country that do not perform abortions, but do many, many services for women, everything from cancer screening to the mammographies that, as you pointed out, Planned Parenthood does not do. If this money was diverted to them, perhaps we would see a different picture.
Absolutely. There are 13,000 federally qualified health centers and rural health centers across the country, compared to about 600 Planned Parenthood clinics. And they provide a wide range of care, not only for women, but children and men, especially low-income and medically underserved populations. And that's in addition to the roughly 2,000 to 3,000 pregnancy centers that are across the country. So women who are in the unique situation of having an unplanned pregnancy can go there for material and emotional support.
The type of support that Planned Parenthood should and does not provide, or perhaps they do, but still the option of abortion is something that is very much on the table for them, which someone who believes that life begins at conception cannot accept. There is an important court case coming up in March before the U.S. Supreme Court. That is the Whole Woman's Health Center versus Cole. Could you explain what this case is about and why it is so important to the pro-life movement?
Sure. This is one of the most important cases that the Supreme Court has agreed to take up over the past 10 years. So this will be very important, not only for the Texas law that's at issue here, but for many other states who are really advancing pro-life legislation. What's going on in the Whole Women's Health case is a challenge to two Texas provisions that place very common sense health and safety standards on the abortion industry. So the two parts of the law that are at issue, one requires that abortion facilities meet the same basic standards for cleanliness, for safety, as other outpatient facilities. And then the second part requires physicians who are performing those abortions to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals.
Let me get this straight. You're saying that the abortion clinics in Texas do not have to meet cleanliness requirements under present law?
They have to meet some cleanliness and safety requirements. This is elevating those requirements to the same as other outpatient surgery facilities. They're called ambulatory surgical centers.
Yeah, I've actually had outpatient surgery, and it's like a mini hospital. And you're saying that right now they're not required to meet those standards, even though they are doing an invasive procedure.
Right. That's correct. And we've seen, especially when the Texas legislature was debating this and when many other states were debating similar laws, there was sort of the specter of Gosnell is what one legislator called it. The Kermit Gosnell was a late-term abortionist out in Philadelphia who in 2013 was convicted of first-degree murder and the deaths of three newborn infants that he brutally murdered moments after their birth, and in the death of a 41-year-old woman who died in his very filthy clinic. Investigators who entered Gosnell's clinic in 2011 called it a house of horrors. There were unsafe operating rooms, trash everywhere, cats running around. It was very unclean, very unsafe. Certainly for the babies who were born and died there, but also for the women who entered that clinic. And so after that episode, even the grand jury report in the Gosnell case suggested to the state of Pennsylvania that you really need to regulate abortion clinics better than you have been. Gosnell's clinic wasn't even investigated for 17 years while all these atrocities to women were going on. So they specifically suggested that states increase oversight of abortion clinics and require them to meet these outpatient surgery facilities. And so after that trial and conviction, many states, including Texas, began to pass these regulations and try to really raise the level of care at these clinics.
That was going to be my next question. The federal government right now seems to be pretty much deadlocked on what to do with it. But the states seem to be moving up and taking more and more action regarding this issue. Is this true as well? The states now are stepping up to the plate.
Absolutely. There were over 200 pro-life laws enacted over the last 4 years alone. It's just an explosive amount of laws that are protecting both unborn children and women. And many of these policies are, again, ensuring that women are given accurate information about an abortion procedure, maybe given the opportunity to see the ultrasound of their child, hear the heartbeat, that the abortion facilities are held to these very reasonable safety standards like Texas has done. And even place limits on late-term abortions. 60% of Americans, including 60% of women, believe that we should limit abortion after 20 weeks, about 5 months of pregnancy, when a child can feel pain and a woman is at greater increased risk of complications. And many states have taken the step to limit abortion after 20 weeks.
How does a pro-life person respond to a pro-abortion person who uses the mass of tissue argument?
This is really a science question. From the moment of sperm egg fusion, any embryology textbook you pick up will say that that is a new living organism that has all the parts to continue living. It just needs the right environment and nutrients, which pregnancy provides. The moment of conception, that is a new human being. And since it is a human being, it's a person that deserves the right to life and the protection of law.
I have a relative who regrettably is on the pro-abortion side of the issue, and she was saying, well, it's non-sentient, it's not capable of taking care of itself, therefore it is not human.
And this is not how we determine whether or not someone is a person, right? It's not the stage of the development, it's not the environment that that person is in, it's not the size of that person. It's whether or not that person is a human that makes it a person and possesses the right to life. So there may be people who are adults who are unconscious or need medical intervention to continue living. Those, they don't suddenly not become persons or not become human because they have lost those capabilities. so too when a child is developing, just because they haven't developed certain capabilities yet doesn't make them not human or not a person.
And that brings up another point, is that pro-life and the euthanasia danger, I think, are very, very closely related. And I think we are in very serious danger of going down that slippery slope.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, a number of states, most recently California, has legalized what they call death with dignity, which is a terrible misnomer. And there are so many misnomers used in both the beginning and end of life debate.
It's suicide.
It is. It's suicide. It's murder if you have a doctor performing it. So there's a lot of work to be done to explain the dignity of human beings, not only from conception but also to natural death, that you can have, as many organizations provide, Little Sisters of the Poor provide, a really dignified way of alleviating pain and dying with actual dignity, not committing suicide.
Sarah, that's about it for our time here. I would like, if our audience wants to know more about the Heritage Foundation, more about the Daily Signal, how can they do that?
You can find out more on heritage.org or dailysignal.com.
And I happen to subscribe to both. Sarah, I want to thank you very much for being our guest today on World Lutheran News Digest, and God bless you.
Thanks, you too.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. and again on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Worldwide KFUO Radio. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Saturday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.